Welcome to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. My name's Natasha Moore. Well, the issue of religious persecution has become a lot more visible over the last year or so with the rise of ISIS and everything that's happening in the Middle East. But not many people are aware of just how bad it is all over the world, and among Christians in particular. Some estimate that up to 4 out of 5 acts of religious discrimination worldwide are against Christians. They face persecution in 139 countries. And Pope Francis has said that there are more martyrs in the church today than there were in the first centuries, meaning the days when, you know, Roman emperors used to throw Christians to the lions. It's worse today than it was back then. In an interview we did with Barney Swartz, who was the former editor of Religion at The Age, and now, since we should declare our interests, he's a senior fellow with CPX, he ventured that the story of Christian persecution challenges the widespread belief that Christians are usually the ones doing the persecuting.
I think it's as bad as it's ever been. The worst of the Roman Empire was only once was it sort of global. People have the idea that Christians do the oppressing, non-Christians that is, in the West. Christianity is far and away the most persecuted group. We're mostly dark and southern and poor.
Open Doors is an international organisation that supports Christians who are facing persecution around the world. Today on Life and Faith, we've got Mike Gore in the studio. He's CEO of the Australian branch of Open Doors. Thanks for coming in, Mike.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
To start out, can you give us a couple of examples of things that are happening right now around the world? So what does religious persecution actually look like for individuals who are going through it?
Yeah, sure, Natasha. So religious persecution is, as I'm sure you can imagine, can be used as this kind of broad brush term to talk about just Christianity and Christians who face difficulty. But when you bring it down to the individual, you really start to see the impacts. And for example, in northern Nigeria, in the last 12 months, we've seen 13,000 churches closed.
What do you mean by closed?
So the pressure of extremist groups, for example, Boko Haram, a extremist group that about 12 months, probably 18 months ago now, kidnapped some girls from Chibok. They have sort of waged war through that region, and the pressures of persecution have seen churches close right across that area. And so we've seen 13,000 of them closed in the last 12 months alone. Syria and Iraq, as you know, and it was seen in the media, is just full of refugees and what we call internally displaced people, Christians having to walk for 10 hours overnight to hopefully the safety of a neighbouring town with only the clothes on their back. Stories of mothers who have been separated from children and husbands, and extremist groups saying, you know, do you have a husband? And the wife pointing them out and him being killed in front of them, and then them told to walk, you know, for hours and hours. And one story I heard of a family who had a heavily disabled son, and he was told, well, pick him up and walk if you want to live. He had to walk for more than 300 kilometres holding his son.
Wow. I mean, some of these things we're hearing about regularly in the media, but others, you know, don't necessarily trickle through. And part of what Open Doors does is to gather information, isn't it, about what's going on in terms of religious freedom and persecution worldwide. How do you go about doing that? How do you even measure persecution?
Yeah, so we have what's called the World Watch List. It's a ranking of, I guess, the top 50 countries where persecution of Christians is the worst. Each year we release this list, and it's used by many organisations as a great tool and a factually based, a well-researched tool that lets the Western church know what life is really like for Christians around the world. We have teams of people researching it. We work with people on the ground in each of these countries. We work in 60 countries. The amount of groundwork we do is incredible.
So in terms of putting together that World Watch List, what kinds of factors put a country on that list?
Sure. So we would measure persecution mainly off, I guess, a few what we call engines or different dynamics for persecution. Things like religious extremism, communism, dictatorial paranoia. We hear all about Islamic extremism, but the number one country on our list is North Korea. Now, that's not Islamic extremism, it's dictatorial paranoia. And the life for Christians in that country is just so oppressive.
So I suppose somewhere like North Korea or Iraq, those are places that we would expect to be on that list. What other countries are on that list, and what other kinds of countries appear on that list?
Sure. So the top 5 countries this year are obviously number 1 is North Korea, number 2 is Somalia, number 3 Iraq, and number 4 Syria. Number five is Afghanistan. But one of the surprising ones for me is always the Maldives.
Yeah.
The Maldives, which Australians so often associate with honeymoons and idyllic sort of tropical paradise. Well, for Christians, the Maldives means potentially losing your identity, having your passport taken. It is an absolutely full-on place for Christians to live.
And what kind of things does Open Doors do to support Christians in those sorts of situations?
We do all sorts of programs. I mean, we're getting so many requests for so many different things. We can be as diverse as providing, you know, safe houses, food and sanitary packs for internally displaced people, persecution preparedness training, bikes for pastors in different parts of Asia. I mean, there's so many different things that we provide.
How did it start?
So Open Doors began 60 years ago, as I said, 1955, by a guy called Brother Andrew. Now, I'm sure many of the listeners would have read a book called God Smuggler. And for those who haven't, it's a great book about the way the ministry began. He had a passion for Jesus, a passion for the church, but more than that, a passion to allow people to have the Bible. And so he began smuggling Bibles in his Volkswagen Beetle into a place called Poland many, many years ago. And that's where our ministry began, out of a heart to get the word into the hands of people who were not freely able to access it.
I haven't read that book, but I've heard that it's a really fascinating story.
Yeah.
Full of kind of adventures and ups and downs.
He is a typical Dutchman. I've had the pleasure of hanging out with him several times, and he is one of the most passionate, most radical people I have ever met. The stories of some of his trips behind the Iron Curtain and the ability he had to just trust in God. I remember he always prays what he calls the smuggler's prayer, and he'll come to a border, a crossing with guards there wanting to inspect his car, and he'll pray the same prayer every day. It would always be, "You make blind eyes see, now I need you to make seeing eyes blind." And he said people would go through his car looking for Bibles and not see a thing. Just incredible stories of God's provision as he delivers the word of God to people all over the world.
So Mike, tell us a bit more about your personal journey in all this. How did you become involved in this kind of work?
Yeah, sure. So I started with the ministry 5 years ago. I had previously worked for about 10 years in the Christian music and retail world. And I left that job and just had a passion to work in a not-for-profit. All I wanted to do was work in a charity and work with people. I knew nothing about Open Doors. I saw a job online, applied for it, and about 12 months later, I found myself in a country called Algeria with a bag full of Bibles, smuggling them into Muslim background believers. I ended up being on lockdown in a hotel for risk of kidnapping for ransom, chased by the secret police. I mean, I know we don't have time today, but I could tell you stories that would blow your mind. And that journey transformed my faith. You see, I realized that for so long I had put Jesus in this box, a smiling, happy guy that gives me everything, calls me to nothing, calls me to lose nothing. And in that moment, I met people that almost lost everything for just the privilege of being in relationship with him. And so it started a five-year journey of complete transformation of faith.
Obviously, religious persecution around the world, it's not only Christians who are victims of that. There are plenty of other persecuted minorities as well. Open Doors focuses particularly on Christians, doesn't it?
That's right.
Why does it particularly focus on Christians and not these other groups?
The problem is so massive. It doesn't mean we don't respect or love people of other faiths, but we are for Jesus. We're for working with the local church. What you'll find is in most of these areas that we work, the local church is one of the best vessels of helping everyone. One of the things I often tell people is I'm not here to end persecution. I'm not even here to stop persecution growing. What our role is as a ministry is to give people the strength to stand in the face of persecution and shine as brightly as they can in their local church.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm speaking with Mike Gore, who's the CEO of Open Doors Australia. But before we return to that interview, here's Barney Swartz again on the plight of Christians in the Middle East.
There's a very real chance that the birthplace of Christianity will have almost none within 20 years. In Iraq, they say they've gone from several million to as low as 150,000. Many have fled, but countless thousands have been killed. Egypt, as you say, is extremely difficult. Christians are, again, an easy target for politicians. The army would foster that. Every time the militants got angry with the army, they'd give them the Christians as a target. Across the whole of North Africa, where you had the Arab Spring, it's been very wintry for Christians.
As for why this is happening, Barney had this to say.
I think that in the Muslim countries there is a resurgent militancy in which Christianity is seen as Western and oppressive and therefore to be targeted. So the Christians tend to be poor and marginalised in those countries and are easy targets. And secondly, any time the West does something irritating, Muslims tend to think of Christians as like the Ummah, where to attack one Muslim is to attack any Muslim. So they can't find an American Christian to attack, but they can find a local poor Pakistani Christian to attack, and they feel that they've done something good. This is, I'm not attacking Muslims here, this is a human tendency, but Christians are certainly suffering from it more than anybody else at the moment.
Now, Mike, the Western media has often failed to report on these situations around the world, and particularly in the Middle East. But do you have a sense that that's changing? Are we starting to be more aware of the persecution of Christians across the world?
Absolutely. I think that we've seen in the last 18 months the media really pick up and run with the story of persecution. It's been an incredibly exciting and proud's not the right word, but I'm really pleased to see that the world is starting to care about it.
So are there particular stories from your time so far at Open Doors that have really stayed with you, particular individuals or particular communities that you've come across?
One of the hardest things my team faces is that we can see big numbers on the news, but we get the stories of the individuals and you carry them. You know, I'm a father with two beautiful girls, and to hear stories of young families who face persecution and the way that kids are used as a tool in persecution to conform the parents, it's one of the most heartbreaking and heart-wrenching things you'll see. There's a family in Syria we're working with. The mother had a dream one night and she felt God say, you know, would you be willing to give your life for me? She said, I took a couple of days, but I said, yeah, ultimately I would be, God. She had the next dream. I felt God say, would you be willing to give your husband's life for me? She said that was a bit harder, but through prayer and talking with him, we ultimately decided that, yeah, we would be willing to do that. These guys now open up their one-bedroom apartment in Syria to be a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week church. They give money, they give food, they have prayer for anyone, any faith, any need, any time of day. In fact, the mother and kids sleep in the hallway so the bedroom can be used for ministry. And while my friend was there, the girls started to draw on this whiteboard in the room, and my friend interrupted the conversation and said, girls, tell me what you're drawing. And they said, oh, well, this is a picture of Syria, and we've got this photo of the office. It's like this cityscape with buildings and blood and rubble and all this sort of stuff. But then there's this gold and rain just pouring down over the top of it. And my friend said, yeah, but girls, what's that rain? And they looked back at him and they just said, that's the love of God raining down over Syria and her people. 6- and 7-year-old girls. There's stories like that. They just drive me on and inspire me to do this job every day of the week.
These situations are incredibly difficult, and you'd think that the sensible answer would be to get these people out of those countries, out of those situations. Why do you think that it's right for those Christians to even want to stay in those situations and not just get out?
Yeah, Natasha, it's a really good question, and one of the ones that, you know, honestly challenges me to the core. You know, persecution is not okay. I just want to clarify that. I said before that I wasn't here to end it or stop it growing. I want to clarify, it's not okay. But it comes back to the idea that for me, you know, I believe Jesus Christ is the hope of the world. To see the church leave some of these countries would be a far bigger tragedy. And so when you find people who are radical enough, who are crazy enough, and who are mental enough to stay, we have to help them.
Well, there are some horrific realities that we're hearing about there, but also some really important humanitarian work that you and your team are doing at Open Doors. Thanks so much for coming in and sharing it with us, Mike.
Natasha, not a problem at all.
If you want to know more about the work of Open Doors, you can visit their website at opendoors.org.au. Next time on Life and Faith, we'll be getting the inside story on Scott Stevens, who's the editor of the ABC Religion and Ethics website and co-presenter with Waleed Ali of Radio National's The Minefield. These days he calls Brisbane home, but he's travelled a long and fascinating road to get there.
My father's a professionally driven man, quite a brilliant mechanical engineer. He was one of the top robotics researchers and innovators in the United States. And one day, he picked up the family and he said, I think God wants us to go visit the Solomon Islands. And then we sold everything. Now, selling everything wasn't a big deal because all of his savings were in little gold coins in a tin box under the bed. He didn't trust Banks either. Yep. Yes, yes, exactly. He was convinced that America was teetering on the brink.
That's next time on Life and Faith. Hope you can join us.